TMSs are among the likely winners of generative AI generally, because they can integrate a lot of these capabilities relatively quickly and make it accessible to clients, enterprise clients, etc. SlaterPod here. Hello, Esther.
Hi, Florian.
All right, packed agenda today. News pod. Want to do a quick debrief with you on last week's pod with Georg L. from Phrase. I think it was a very interesting discussion. And just want to kind of unpack a couple of the things he said. ChatGPT Enterprise, but we did a quick machine translation test and no bueno. Then you're going to walk us through the Inc. 5000 list and which LSPs got featured. Meta MT announcements are everywhere now these days. Appen's continued crash. How low can it go? And we're going to talk about typos and discounts and stuff like that. So, but you're heading over to Portland. What dates are you going to go to Portland and why are you going to go to Portland?
Yeah, not just on a holiday, although I'm sure it will be a lot of fun. Going to Portland to attend the ALC summit. So that will be the 20th to 22nd of September. Looking forward to it. I will be presenting the results of the ALC survey that we have been running.
Yeah, we ran that. ALC, Association of Language Companies, Portland Annual Summit at the Nines Hotel. Probably still time to sign up.
Still time to sign up. Yeah, I think they're expecting 150, 200 people maybe. So should be a good gathering of industry folks.
But you'll be back by the time we host our own good gathering in Zurich, right?
Yes, I'll be back and raring to go.
Zurich, October 4th. October 4th in this town. Agenda's now complete, essentially. Great to confirm John Linder, head of accessibility from Swiss TXT. They're the sole, or one of the, probably the sole to near sole provider of accessibility services for the Swiss broadcasting systems. They have some other clients. Very interesting. So yeah, going to captioning, the use of AI, and like they're looking at all of these new technologies that are they're popping up in accessibility. Of course, also we ran our or going to present our subtitling and captioning pro guide. I'll speak to that in a second. Now, we also have Beatrice Verdasco, head of localization of Trendyol Group, online fashion retailer. That's going to be great. Have her on the panel. So you do want to buy tickets relatively soon because there's only about 5 tickets left for the pre-conference networking. So like that's probably we're going to close those over the weekend. So if you do want to get the full package with networking the day before, and the full conference, you want to buy the ticket in the next few days because we're going to close that. But of course, there's a few more, a couple of dozen more tickets left for the main conference. We're going to go to, you know, 120, 130. Probably 130 eventually. All right, so that's SlaterCon Zurich, then Slater Pro Guide, subtitling and captioning. We launched that about a week ago. Head over. It's a nice 35-page kind of overview of all things subtitling, captioning, accessibility, like presenting 10 use cases. Just to give you a brief flavor, for example, one use case is real-time closed captioning for live television broadcast. Then SDH, basically subtitle for the deaf and hard of hearing for documentaries, live captions for conferences, automatic captions for short-form content, like clips from this podcast, for example, which we are sharing on LinkedIn and Twitter and, I don't know, not Instagram and not TikTok. I don't think. Are you on TikTok?
No. Are you? No.
No. I was just wondering if like anybody gets any traction with corporate content, like B2B, you know, stuff like what we're doing on TikTok, or is it just...
On a tangent, right, I play this word game on my phone and I had a pop-up ad as part of the word game that was advertising translation services.
Who?
No, I really can't remember. I would say, but I think it was UK-based LSP, but it was a fleeting. I should have taken a note of it, but just thought, wow, people are advertising everywhere, you know, not just Google, in these kind of random like free to play download games.
That would be so interesting to know how that ended up there. Like, I guess the LSP didn't like strike a deal with the actual game developer to feature that. That would be very complicated. Maybe there's some channel and they said, hey, yeah, let's go to free games. So hang on, so what word game?
It's like I can't even remember what it's called. Hang on, because I literally play it every day. Word Trip.
Word Trip.
20 minutes in the morning. It's kind of how I wake up before I have a cup of tea. I'm like, get my brain in gear. How to explain it. I mean, you have to go and check it out if you can and you have a vague interest. But basically, it's like spelling words out of a number of letters that they give you.
That is a lot more intelligent than, you know, TikTok consumption, I guess. No, I just scroll 15 minutes, 20 minutes through Twitter and, you know, and it's yeah, brain's more or less off. You're ramping your brain up. I'm just filling it with more stuff.
Sorry, that was a digression, but I thought relevant. So back on track.
Yeah, we were with the subtitling captioning report and the short form content format and the subtitles, you know, and just like one word, I don't know, caption/subtitles, etc., that make it super engaging, but you cannot take it for more than like 15, 20 seconds, right? I mean, if you consume content and it's like one word per, you know, one word at a time and you watch it for more than like a minute, I mean, you're going to go insane. So a lot of great content in the report, in the pro guide, 10 use cases, kind of wrapped into bigger, you know, market drivers, buyers, applications, technology, role of linguists, etc. Head over, get it, or subscribe to Growth Pro and Enterprise and get it there. Now, last week we had Georg L. Frey, CEO, on the podcast. Just want to highlight one aspect that I find really interesting that kind of underlines the thesis that we're currently kind of exploring here at Slater, that the TMSs are among the likely winners of kind of generative AI generally, because they can integrate a lot of these capabilities relatively quickly and make it accessible to, you know, clients, enterprise clients, etc. So, I mean, what Georg said, that, you know, they're integrating things like MTQE, machine translation quality estimation, no code, like orchestration. You know, you can basically drag and drop and they're going to simplify it to the point where probably even I would get it. I think right now it's like low code, but they would have to go. I encouraged Georg to move it to like full no code. So you can just drag and drop. And then they also kind of integrate these, you know, not their own machine translation, but like they're just open to all other machine translation providers as well. So basically building like this central hub. Yeah, that can plug into all these other capabilities and new and emerging capabilities. MTQE, it's not new, but it's kind of becoming more and more and more important. No-code orchestration obviously got a big boost with Blackbird being out there now. And so you know, Phrase is trying to integrate all of this. Yeah, very interesting. I would really encourage you to head over and listen to the podcast if you haven't done so yet. All right. ChatGPT launched an enterprise product, because, like, you know, millions of people went rogue, signed up with their personal credit card and or like made somebody else sign up for them and use it kind of on an individual basis, and obviously it's not secure and etc. It's kind of the same issues we had with Google Translate back in the days when it was kind of a consumer product, right? Or DeepL, when just everybody liked it and there was no enterprise offering and people just went over and bought it individually. And now OpenAI launched this enterprise version, which is, you know, a standard SaaS kind of offering, where you know, like I could buy a subscription for Slater and then add seats and, you know, basically get certain encryption standards and make sure that they don't train. I mean, they're saying they don't train the AI on your content, etc. I haven't been able to sign up though yet. I mean, I went to the link and didn't get me anywhere, because I guess I'll get it for Slater. Because it is useful. Are you still using it?
I'm still using it. Yeah. I'm not so much, I'm not actively playing around with it, but I am using it just as and when I think it might be of use.
I use it for the most random things. So For example, just before, like I wanted to count the number of authors in the Meta machine translation paper, and it was a lot of names. And so you just take it, copy paste it. How many authors? And oh, 69 authors. All right. So, I mean, probably could have just copy pasted in the spreadsheet, but it's marginally faster. Helps with headlines, and we should probably think about how we can leverage it in content generation generally. All right, back from my little tangent. Now, that triggered me to look at the machine translation quality again. And on the one hand, we cover these research papers that obviously run highly standardized, highly controlled, highly structured machine translation quality experiments, tests, trials. But then from time to time, I just want to copy paste a piece of content into ChatGPT and ask it to translate. And this time I did it with I think it was a Bloomberg article on like German bond yields and like inflation. And it was terrible. The machine, I mean, this is why this topic, that was what I used to translate as a translator back in the days, right? And it was terrible. I mean, it got a lot of things wrong, like actually wrong. Like, you know, yields rose instead of yields fell wrong. Like literally the opposite, okay? And then also a lot of super awkward kind of phrasing, like just language-wise. It wasn't that exactly. Like just not very fluid, not very nice. That was English to German, by the way. I forgot to mention that. And then it kind of made, there's even a word that I don't even know exists, like the plural of pressures in German. I don't think that word exists in German. It's it's kind of a semi made up word, which is interesting. Like, I don't think, yeah.
They kind of did a literal translation or?
It was literal and it kind of made up that word. I mean, that word almost doesn't have a plural in German. So, which is interesting because like, where would it have found this particular word? Because if you Google it, it's probably like, it's like 1,000 or something. And those thousands are typos, right? So where would it, how could it come up with this word? It's really bad. So I wonder, and it didn't used to be that bad. Like I feel like 6 months ago when I tested it, it was a lot better. And I also tested it on empty content. So I know, random test, one-off, nothing controlled, nothing structured and everything, but you know, literally 150 words and 5 actual errors and like 7 really poorly worded parts. So I don't know where this is going. Go back to the usual narrower language models, like, you know, all the other narrower MT companies that are out there. All right, so from my little grammar and translation check over to the Inc. 5000 list, and you looked at how many LSPs made the list.
Yeah, so this is something that Inc. 5000 publishes every year, and I say it's a giant list. It's a list of 5000 companies, but we normally sift through and find out which of them are language service providers or related to language industry. Generally, it's a list of the fastest growing US companies. They have to be privately held American companies for profit. In this year, 2023, they had to be founded before 2019 and have like a minimum revenue threshold of 100,000 in the same year. Although the minimum revenue kind of criteria for 2022 was 2 million. So everybody on the list is above 2 million in annual revenues as of 2022. We had 11 LSPs that we identified on that list. And this is based on the percentage revenue growth between 2019 and 2022. Some of them, I mean, more than half of them are repeat entrants, let's call it. They 8 of them were also on the list in 2022. Another one was on the list in 2021. So I will just call out some of the ones that we identified. And I've got the fastest of the fastest, i.e. let's look at the kind of top of the top here. We've got PGLS with a a global rank. So this is not among language service providers, but among all 5,000 companies, came in at 461. 424. There we go. Let me look at the right number. With growth of over 1,000% over those 3 years. And that was the second consecutive year that PGLS has been listed.
1,000%. So 10x in revenues in 3 years.
Over 3 years, yeah.
I think they're mostly a government contractor in the US, right? Kind of Washington, D.C. area. Good for them, 1,000%.
Then we've got Boostlingo. So second top of the fastest growing LSPs. They were at rank around 619 in 2023 and has grown over 947% over 3 years.
That's a long way since we visited them in San Francisco in 2018. Wow, 947%, 3 years.
Another one high up on that list was Blue Digital Group, which is a media technology services provider, which includes localization and accessibility. They were also on the list in 2022. They are around they're ranked 963, with more than 600% growth over those 3 years. That's everybody who was within that top 1,000 of the Inc. 5,000 list. Narrowly outside of that, however, was Propio, the healthcare interpreting company. Do other things, but heavily focused on healthcare interpreting. And they've been on the list several times in the past and had 574% growth over those 3 years.
I mean, this is probably also M&A driven, right? They did a few deals.
With Proprio for sure. Yeah. And then we had a couple that were new for the first time in 2022. There was a company called Bilingual Global that was founded in 2018. It's a BPO firm that provides multilingual customer service and support in more than 150 languages. Also, Fed Writers, which are government business specialists, also a first-time entrant. It offers content development services, including translation and interpreting. Lots of other repeat entrants as well. Other people that made the list were Terra Translations, the Spanish Group, Ericsson Translations, CQ Fluency, and Globo Language Solutions. So congrats to everybody on the list.
All right, 11 out of 5,000. Looks like at least some LSPs and language tech companies are flourishing in this highly competitive environment that is full of AI. Let's talk about, take a bit of a hard turn here towards Meta. We try to unpack all of their language AI machine translation research now a few times on the podcast. But they keep sending more announcements. They keep launching more frameworks. They keep, it's very hard to keep track. So
Nonstop.
It's crazy. And it's very hard to differentiate. Okay, is this something new? Is this an iteration on a previous thing you launched 6 months ago? So now this time we're talking about something they call Seamless M4T. All right, M4T. We call it a Swiss Army knife of translation models. And that's what I use ChatGPT for, because they had 69 authors on the page. And I'm like, I'm not going to count that. Copy, paste, ChatGPT. How many authors? 69. The launch paper has 102 pages. And now, unfortunately, though, it starts with literally the first sentence is, what does it take to create the bobblefish? And I'm like, no. Do not do that. It's the oldest metaphor in MT. Don't start your revolutionary paper with what does it take to create the bobblefish. I guess the only lamer opening would have been let's tear down the language barrier or something like that. Some other totally overused metaphor cliche. And maybe if they ever used a picture, they should have a robot hand touching a human hand. And then there's a spark in the middle or something. All right, sorry, I stopped the snark here. But So what does it do? Because it's a big thing. It does automatic speech recognition, speech-to-speech translation, speech-to-text translation, text-to-speech translation, text-to-text translation, good old MT, and then something they call, what is it, speech-text, I can't even read that. People are going to turn the podcast off. Anyway, so it does a lot of stuff. It works in 100-plus languages. It's, you know, it's massively multilingual, multimodal. And it being, it's a model, they open sourced, you can get it, you can download it, they trained it, etc. And you can use it for whatever you want to do with it, you know. So Meta's doing a ton of open sourcing, you know, this one is a bit more narrow, but they obviously also open source Llama 2 and all that stuff. So they're really pushing this out for people to start building on it. And then, you know, hopefully, I guess Meta hopes that this is all going to enable a non-language barrier metaverse at some point. Just to recap, they launched low-resource, massively multilingual MT in mid-2022. That's almost, you know, more than a year ago. Then massively multilingual speech translation in May 2023. And then multilingual speech model, VoiceBox, in June 2023. And now this one. And again, we probably missed a couple in between. So hundreds of people at Meta, very busy developing machine translation, speech-to-speech machine translation for a lot of languages. And I guess that's what's the differentiator here to some of the narrower, more B2B-focused companies, you know, like DeepL or maybe even Google Translate. They're trying to really go for low-resource languages as well so that they work. All right. And one company, and I'm trying to do a good segue here, but the one company that should technically benefit from all of this, technically should benefit from this, is Appen. But Appen's getting absolutely hammered on the public markets. I mean, their share price is down like something like 95% now. So if you invested 100, you're down to like $5. Yeah, if you had invested at the peak, you'd basically be left with almost zero. Yeah, tell us a bit more. What's going on?
The latest news coming out of Appen was their financial results for the first half of 2023. So that was to the end of June 2023. They had declines really across the business, both reporting units, global services, and also new markets. So H1 revenue was just under $140 million. I think it was like 24% down year on year. So that's quite a significant decline from one half in 2022 to the first half in 2023. Also, EBITDA negative in the first half. So not a happy state of affairs really on the kind of financial side. And then, you know, as you mentioned, shares fell further in Appen when those results were announced on, I think it was Monday. Shares fell more than 30% on that one day. I did check yesterday. I think they were up slightly after that immediate kind of slump, but probably not significantly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm checking now. It's basically just briefly kind of, but now it's basically back to almost, yeah, still down like 30%.
Yeah, and it's kind of continuing a bit of a bad run, not only on the shares, but also revenue-wise. I think revenues, when they announced their 2022 financial results, they declined 13% from what I remember year on year. They, of course, brought in a new CEO in December 2022, I think it was, and he, in the financial results, was really wanting to emphasize sort of, you know, resettling the business, returning to EBITDA positivity by the end of the year. Of course, they're doing also some cost reduction, cost savings in the business. Also pointing a lot to, you know, explaining, I suppose, the reasons behind why the revenues dropped so much. So they're talking about clients who are essentially evaluating or, you know, considering their AI strategies. So a bit of wait and see sort of symptom, according to them. Some issues still related to like pandemic, ongoing kind of pandemic hangover in China. And then generally they said it's a result of headwinds from the broader technology market slowdown. And as I already said, customers kind of evaluating their AI strategy. So they're kind of still overall quite positive, or very positive, I should say, about the AI space, and specifically generative AI. So they're saying, you know, we're repositioning ourselves to cater more to the generative AI space, as opposed to deep learning, which is, you know, the current focus. But of course, there is, you know, a lot of competition.
Did he say that in that way?
Which one?
I mean, deep learning would be generative AI. It's kind of a part of it, right?
The way that they sort of outlined it, I mean, there was a bit of a breakdown in terms of what they're meaning between deep learning versus generative AI. I don't have the graphic to hand, but I think it's kind of how they're segmenting where their customers and the types of projects that they'll be working on.
We'll have to look at that. Yeah, I also think that they're getting massive heat from competition, especially in that space. I mean, there was a OpenAI announcement that they partner with Scale AI. This is kind of it's kind of the tech version of Appen almost, or at least that's how it was kind of presented. Maybe it started kind of 4 or 5 years ago, and so it was interesting, like the sequence there for Scale AI. Again, I mean, basically we're talking about this for those people, like, why are we talking about these kind of AI data labeling companies? I mean, it's something that a lot of LSPs have moved into as well. So it is relevant for the language industry generally. There's a number of language service providers that have sizable language AI kind of data annotation operations. So in a sense, these are just the pure play players there, but LSPs are in this space as well. All right, back to Scale AI. I mean, there was a headline in January 2023 that they cut 20% of their workforce. But then in February 2023, they announced like a $7 billion valuation funding. I mean, I think it was like $100 million or something, but valued the company at $7 billion. And then they started hiring again. So when you go to the LinkedIn profile, like, you know, 2-year growth, 130%. So you have Appen basically just kind of revenue going down, posting losses, scaling back staff, et cetera, and basically trying to re-gear their entire business model to benefit from what is, you know, unquestionably a massive boom in AI. And then you have a company like Scale that is getting a lot of investor money and you know, probably not profitable, but getting a lot of investor money and boosting their market share. Because it's OpenAI, I mean, if you're Appen, that's the one account you want to get if you want to get into generative AI. Right. So, and that just went to your competitor in an I'm not sure if it's exclusive, but definitely the strategic partnership. Yeah. So probably we'll find a floor at some point in the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, Appen it is, or somebody's going to buy them. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Hey, we had an interesting question in one of our newsletters. There was a freelancer posted on, I think it was Twitter, that like she was asked to give discounts for typos by an LSP. So for me, there's two questions. A, how can you even still make typos? Like, wouldn't the kind of autocorrect pick that up? But let's put that aside. And then we ask, like, in the newsletter, yeah, we ran our kind of weekly poll. So 62% said hard no way for discounts for typos. And then 24% said maybe for certain jobs. And then, you know, fair, yeah, sure, only 13%. What's your opinion? I mean, you know, your PM background, would you have chased the linguists for discounts?
No, not a translator, no, definitely not. I mean, yes, okay, you've got all these spell checking, but sometimes things do creep through. I mean, this could be something like, for example, getting US versus UK English spelling mixed up. You don't know what the nature of the typo was. So no, I don't think so. I mean, also that's why you have other forms of normally quality control, review, whatever it might be. That's my personal take.
How would you even have tracked it?
probably through, let's say, changes that the reviewer made. So assuming that you're working with translator editor or translator reviewer, you can see a red line version of what the reviewer has changed. I mean, it depends on the as an English speaking project manager, you know, doesn't know all of the languages. Maybe you can work out. I may or may not have realized in looking at the review in looking at what the editor changed. I may or may not have realized that it was correcting an error as opposed to, you know, just changing something stylistically. Me as a project manager, but. Yeah, I mean, normally you kind of have a look at whatever the editor changes, especially if it's a lot.
That's the identification of the typo or finding the typo. But then how about like actually putting it into this? I mean, putting it into the system and really like making it so you really get a discount. You have to. I mean, it seems complicated unless you have some automated way. So just kind of implementing that guideline, I guess, that some kind of ops manager gave that at that LSP, like, hey, we're going to discount. We're going to deduct things for typos. It seems like very complicated. And while we were talking about this, we noticed that we have a new ad on Slida.com by Smartling that says, guaranteed translation quality. If you're not satisfied, we will rework it at our cost. So Smartling's going full, hey, if you're not happy, we'll rework it. So if there's a typo, you're not happy, Smartling's going to give you a discount.
I mean, a typo is not going to... No, it doesn't say discount. It says we will rework it at our cost.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. All right.
Yeah, but equally, it doesn't cost a lot to rework a typo, unless you also have to cover the costs of printing, which has been known to happen in the past.
What is printing? It's been a while since I printed anything. I have a big printer here at the office, but I so rarely use it. All right, that's it. For today's Slaterpod, get your ticket for Zurich. And if you're in Portland at the ALC, send an email to Esther so you guys can connect. All right. See you soon.
Bye.